Welcome to Roaming with Restless Women, real talk with wise, dynamic women leaders. I'm your host, Julie Noonan, CEO and founder of Intuitive Wisdom Coaching, and I'm living my dream life. I live and work in my RV, coaching senior women leaders as they navigate corporate politics, family drama, and personal goals to live their own dream lives. These women are restless. They are never done seeking new opportunities, learning, and creating value in the world. If you'd like to apply to be on the show, stick around to the end and I'll let you know how. Let's go.
Welcome back to Roaming with Restless Women. We have a pioneer with us today. Ann Butler Montgomery has worked as a television sportscaster, newspaper and magazine writer, teacher, author, and amateur sports official. She was a sportscaster when women were not represented in that field hardly at all back in the 80s. She worked for five TV stations, including ESPN in Bristol, Connecticut, where she anchored the Emmy and ACE Award-winning Sports Center. She finished her on-camera broadcasting career with a two-year stint as the studio host for the NBA's Phoenix Suns, where she currently lives in Phoenix, half the time anyway. Ann was a freelance and staff writer for six publications, writing sports, features, movie reviews, and archaeological pieces. Her novels, and she's a novelist too, include Your Forgotten Sons, The Castle, A Light in the Desert, Wild Horses on the Salt, my favorite title, The Scent of Rain, and Wolf Catcher. Montgomery taught journalism and communication skills in a Title I high school for 20 years and was an amateur sports official for four decades, a time during which she called baseball, ice hockey, soccer, and basketball games, and served as a high school football referee and crew chief. Montgomery is a foster mom to three sons and a daughter. When she can, she indulges in her passions, which are rock collecting, scuba diving, and playing her guitar. And the piece de resistance, she splits her time between Phoenix, Arizona, and St. Croix in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Welcome, Anne.
Well, thank you, Julie, for inviting me.
Oh, thank you for having me. I absolutely love the variety in your personal life journey. So we're going to have a great time talking about that. First thing, you mentioned before we got on air that you were one of the first women sportscasters on TV. So tell me, A, how did you become involved in sports and why sportscasting instead of, you know, newscasting or anchoring? Tell me, what was your particular view on that?
I realize now looking back that I was an idiot because, you know, when my mother stood there and said, so you have to go to college, and I was 17, what do you want to be when you grow up? I said, I'm going to be a sportscaster. And she looked at me and she said, don't be ridiculous. I'm trying to have a serious conversation with you.
Oh.
But I was being serious. The thing is, I grew up, I was an ice skater growing up. I was not a good ice skater. I was an ice dancer. I was way too big. I was too heavy, but I grew up in an arena. And
okay.
Like anybody who ever picks up a tennis racket or a baseball bat or a football, you all briefly have these dreams of, in my case, gold medals. And, you know, I'm going to be an NFL quarterback. So I got that. I started skating at five and I skated for about 20 years. And even though I knew that wasn't going to happen, that athlete part of my heart went, oh, wouldn't that be great? And so I became enamored of sports. Because I grew up in an arena, I also fell in love with ice hockey. Now, today, I would play hockey. I would not be an ice dancer. Okay, I would have loved to play hockey, but I was before Title IX. Girls didn't do that sort of thing. And so I grew up loving hockey and ice skating I was in a high school in northern New Jersey where we had a broadcast crew, and I was on that crew, which meant for a half hour every morning we did a radio show. We had music, we had announcements, and one day one of the hockey players came up to me and handed me an announcement to do because he knew me from, I was the statistician for the hockey team. And so I went up and I pulled all the sports stories out of the basket where people dumped their announcements, and I went to read them, and the guys freaked out. They said, you can't read the sports, you're a girl. And so I said, I'm going to read them anyway. So we're arguing, and the teacher who ran
Oh
the
my
protesters comes out
goodness.
and goes, if Annie wants to read the sports, she can read the sports. She got a show to do in 5 minutes. Do it. So I read all the sports. So they were angry. And the next day, I pulled all the sports stories again before anybody got there. And I started doing the sports every day. Well, the guys were annoyed. So they started, they gave me a theme song, which was Mission Impossible. You know, da, 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 da. And then they'd say, and up next, Big Ann with the sports. And they thought by calling me Big Ann and playing Mission Impossible that I would see the error of my ways and quit, but I didn't.
That was
I
their version
liked
of bullying back
right. And so
then.
I enjoyed it. So people started giving me all the sports announcements. And so the day my mother said that to me, I was like, yeah, I want to be a sportscaster. And of course, when I went to college, I went to Miami of Ohio, and my professor said, you'll never be a sportscaster, you're a woman. And even though they said that senior year, they did we had a PBS station there, and they were going to do a Miami of Ohio sports teams show. Would you like to co-anchor it? Yes, that'd be great. But and so when I got there, I found out that the football coach, the baseball coach, and the basketball coach all refused to speak to me. They would not be interviewed by me. I couldn't interview their players. And so the male that I co-anchored with, he did that. And I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do now? Then I realized that, like most universities, there's all kinds of teams. There's wrestling and hockey and gymnastics and tennis and swimming and all these teams that no one ever paid attention to. So I started contacting them. They were so thrilled that
Yes.
anybody wanted to do a story on their teams, which were always ignored. They didn't care that I was a girl. So I did that. But these shows were taped, right? So I did. So I got out of college with my degree. It's 1977. I couldn't get an interview anywhere. I moved
Wow.
to Washington, D.C., and I got a job in a bar in Georgetown in the 80s. Oh, what fun that was.
Slinging drinks,
Oh,
yeah.
God. Yeah, I was a server and a bartender, and my parents were appalled. They came down and had an intervention. They're like, what are we going to tell our friends? You're a waitress. But I was having such a good time. But anyway, accidentally, again, I went to a Washington Capitals game one night, and with my aunt, who was more like a sister. And she brought a date, and the date was an amateur ice hockey official. And he was bemoaning the fact that there just weren't enough officials for kids' games. And my aunt goes, well, Annie can skate, not paying attention to the fact I'd never been on hockey skates, which are different than figure skates.
Oh, yeah.
And she goes, yeah, she can do it. And the guy goes, you want to be a referee? And I said, sure. Right? So I took the test, did the whole thing, and I went to that first hockey game. I don't know. Have you ever seen little kids play hockey?
Oh, they're
Tiny
so
ones?
cute.
I know their little jerseys down to their ankles and their tiny
Oh,
little
I
sticks, and their
know.
helmets are always crooked because their heads are too little. And
Yeah.
I put on those hot, brand new hockey skates for the first time. And though I'd spent my life on figure skates, the big difference is toe picks.
Oh, yes.
So I'm a lazy skater. If I fell, I'd jump up on my toe picks. And so I went out to take that first face off, and I fell. And I couldn't get up. I kept digging my toe pick out of habit, and I kept falling over. And these 6-year-olds are staring down at me like, "What's wrong with the referee?" I remember nothing else from that game, but I remember the drive home, and I realized I did not know enough about sports to be a sportscaster. I didn't watch sports. I really didn't. I understood hockey, but football, baseball, soccer, basketball, I really didn't understand those sports. So I decided then and there on that drive home that I was going to become a certified sports official in the five main team spectator sports: football, baseball, ice hockey, soccer, and basketball. And I would do that for 5 years and work in the bar. And that when I was done, I could convince some forward-thinking news director that they should hire me. And that's what happened. 5 years later, I was 28 years
Wow.
old, and I
5 years.
applied to an open box in the back of Broadcasting Magazine. This was way before the internet. And they didn't tell you where the town was. They just said sportscaster wanted, apply to box 1324. I did that. I get a call from a news director in Columbus, Georgia. And going from Washington, D.C. to Columbus, Georgia was like time travel backwards. And I went there, and they said, okay, you're our new sports director, and you're going to anchor the 6 and 11 o'clock news. It's Sunday night. You're going to be on Wednesday. I didn't know how to do TV. I knew how to make a good drink, but I didn't know how
Well,
to
you
do
also
TV.
knew how to do radio, though, or announcements at least.
Yeah, but that was years, or that was 10 years earlier. I mean, I was about,
Yeah,
well, and
well.
I did it in college, but it was taped. This is live TV. So yeah, it was a nightmare. I made a lot of horrible mistakes. My first couple of stations, I went from Columbus, Georgia to Rochester, New York. I had wonderful male partners who should have gotten the sports director jobs. I walked in and took it without any experience, really. And they were very kind and helped me. Throughout my career, I worked for five TV stations. There were some lovely people and there were some jerks. But I was very fortunate early on to have two great guys who took me by the hand and said, "This is how we do this." And so I learned. And that's why I was encouraged young people who want to be in broadcasting, please go 1,000 miles from anyone you know, because you're going to make mistakes in front of people on TV. And so you try to forget about those. But yeah, so I ended up doing it, even though everybody said I couldn't.
And then you wound up on ESPN
Yes.
when it basically in the, when was this, in the 80s or
I was
90s?
there 90 to 92, and it was
Okay.
and suddenly they said, "You can't have an entire newsroom full of men. You have to,
Oh,
you have
yeah. They were
diversity."
starting to,
Oh, I'm
yeah.
so, you have to have diversity, that kind of stuff. And
Yeah.
so they had one woman at a time, basically. They were awful to all of us. It really upset me because why would you hire me if you didn't think I knew what I was doing? And I'll give you an example. Are you a baseball fan at all?
Not really.
Okay,
I think
I'll
it's
tell the story
boring.
anyway. So I ended up officiating, and I never quit officiating, even though I was in TV. I officiated for 40 years. I ended up being a baseball umpire for 25 and a football official for 40. But so I was an umpire, and when you do SportsCenter, usually you have the opportunity to see the highlights before you go on. A young production assistant will put some highlights together, come to your desk and say, "I finished these highlights, come take a look," and then you put them in your own words, because we all do highlights. And but sometimes the game ends while you're on the air. And so this young kid flies in a commercial break, throws me some highlights, the red light goes on, and I have to do them. So I go, "Oh, and let's go to Wrigley Field." And the first shot, he goes, "Oh, a fan is hit with a foul tip in the front row at Wrigley Field." And I knew that was a mistake. That can't happen in baseball. You cannot be hit with a foul tip. And you're probably thinking, why? Why can't you? Well, after the show, there's something called a postmortem where all the people, 12 people, get together that worked on the show, sit in a conference room, and discuss what went well, what went poorly, what can we do better. And so I went, "Rich," to this young production assistant. I said, "Rich, that first play was wrong." He goes, "No, it wasn't." I said, "Yeah, it was." I said, "You can't be hit with a foul tip in baseball. A foul tip is a ball that goes from the bat to the catcher's glove. It's caught. It's a live ball, which means that if you're stealing home, they can make a play on you. A foul ball goes out of play, it's a dead ball." So it's a very important distinction. And there's silence. All these guys, all guys. And he stood up, he goes, "You're nothing but a picky bitch." I said, "No, Rich, I'm an umpire. And some people know I'm an umpire, and I'm embarrassed to make that kind of mistake." He stomps out, and this is a kid just out of college, no experience, right? That wasn't the worst part. Not one guy defended me at ESPN, like they didn't understand baseball. Next day, I got called into my boss's office, and he ordered me to apologize to Rich because I hurt his feelings. I said, "I didn't raise my voice. I didn't yell. I just wanted them to understand. There's a foul ball and a foul tip, very fundamental baseball rules. So why did they hire me if they didn't think I knew what I was doing?"
That is, that wouldn't, oh, if that happened today, oh my
Well, but you know
goodness.
what? I don't think it does. I think they maybe know better. But there was another guy at ESPN Howie, who I didn't know what he did. He just wandered around the newsroom. And it turns out he was the information man. This was prior to the internet, where you could just look things up. And if you needed a piece of information, you called Howie over and said, "Howie, why, what, when was the who was the home run leader in 1964? He would know that, or he'd find it.
Oh
Find it
my
for you in like
gosh.
2 seconds. So I never used Howie's information, but one day he walked by and I was late, and I said, "Ah, could you help me?" And he gave me a piece of information. I said, "Thank you so much." Went on the air. Get called into my boss the next day. "Why did you say that on the air?" I said, "Well," and I didn't want to throw Howie under the bus, but I then see him leaning in the door behind me. I said, "Well, Howie gave me that information." And Howie looked at my boss. He said, "I never told her anything." So I could no longer use the fact man. So it was that kind of thing. It was always, and I will, again, I'll say this, there were some lovely men I met along the way who were very helpful, but there were always a few who felt offended that I was not in my place.
Well, we all know, especially women of our age. I'm pretty much the same age as you. And we still see them every once in a while. And
Yeah,
we're
I tell you.
hearing more of them now with this bro podcast group and the BS that they're spitting out.
This episode is sponsored by me. So, as a special gift to you, our listeners, I offer a free 1-on-1 15-minute breakthrough session. Bring a problem and an experience how coaching works to see if it could be of value to you. Sign up for an available time on my website, intuitivewisdomcoach.com.
Do
It's
something
funny.
about it.
I understand what I went through. I understand that I didn't belong there. Understand too that I was an official for, as I said, 4 decades. I didn't belong in a baseball field or a football field either. So the men there, often it was the same. Some were kind, but some were adamant they wouldn't work with me. Some schools didn't want me working their fields. And eventually there were a few more women who stepped in with me. But I remember my boss, my officiating boss, came to me one day, goes, "Too bad you don't officiate women's sports. You might get somewhere." I said, "But I like football and baseball." And so I might have gotten the state championship if I did softball or girls basketball, because I didn't belong doing boys sports. That's why I became the referee. Are you a football fan at all? How many referees on a football field?
I don't know.
Well, it's a trick question because there's only one. The one with the white hat and the one that says I have holding 76 offense.
Oh, the one
That's
that
the
appears on
referee, the
camera.
one that talks. So for 14 seasons, I was a wing. I worked the sidelines, the chains, that kind of thing. And I kept getting thrown off men's crews. They kept saying, "We're never getting the state championship with you on our crew because you're a woman." And I'm like, "Don't know what you want me to do with that." So they'd throw me off their crews. And every year at our annual beginning of the season meeting, 400 officials gather in the same room, and they say, "Anybody want to start a new crew this year?" Because they always needed new crews, like a referee and then all the four other guys that went with you. And I stood up in that meeting and said, "Yeah, I want to be a referee," because I knew that anybody who came up to me would understand what they were getting, and that they'd never get the state championship, but I'm a very good official. And as the referee, you're the crew chief. You're in charge. You have to contact the coaches. You've got to do the. It's like being the secretary, but I was in charge. And whatever my crew did wrong, it was on me. And I figured out they're going to blame me anyway. So I ended up, in the beginning with guys that really weren't very good officials and didn't, no one wanted them. But that was fine. And eventually I ended up with guys that stayed me 10, with 10, 12, 13 years at a time. And we were like family. And that's what I miss. I don't miss TV. I don't miss teaching, but I miss Friday night football with the boys. I really do. And I always got a big thrill of walking out on the field and hearing people go, "Hey, the ref's a girl."
Well, moving on from the referee life and the sportscaster life, you're an author. You write novels. How did
I
this come
do. I
about?
do. And it was a sort of a. When my contract was not renewed at ESPN, and my partner Ryan, I say I was fired. He said, "No, your contract was not renewed." I said, "Yeah, but and I did a little bit of work with the Phoenix Suns. I worked 2 seasons as their studio host, but then I was 40, and I couldn't get a job on TV anymore because I wasn't pretty enough anymore to be on camera, and that is a reality. I have told my students, they're like, "That's not fair. They can't do that." I said, "Yes, they can. They can. I'm 40 years old. The target audience for sports are 18 to 34-year-old males. And once a woman's 35, 36, unless she has a gold medal or she played in the WNBA, that's a little different. But for regular old people like me, I was done and I was crushed and I was depressed and I was in the middle of a divorce and I was in debt and everything was wrong. And I didn't want to run into anybody I knew. I was embarrassed. I didn't want anybody to look at me and say, "So what are you doing now?" Because I couldn't get a job doing anything but officiating. So I went from ESPN to calling Little League and doing high school ball. And I felt I had fallen so far that I didn't want to see anybody I knew. And I realized now I was depressed. And I kept
Quite, I'm
trying to get
sure.
jobs and nobody would hire me. I remember I even went to a sports bar, brand new sports bar, bartender needed. Now, okay, I've got no money. I can't pay my bills. And I went in and I said, look, I can entertain your sports pa your patrons, whether they're sober or not, and I can make a great cocktail. And he stood and paused for quite a long time. He looked me up and down and he said, I don't think so. And I realized he was looking for a 20-something in a short skirt and a push-up bra. And I was like, I was horrified. So I was officiating. That's all I did. And I remember one day I was in the grocery store and I'd just done a baseball game and I've got my sweaty navy blue t-shirt on, my gray slacks, my baseball shoes, and I'm buying something at the grocery store and some man is staring at me. And he comes up to me and he looks at me and he goes, didn't you used to be somebody? And I'm like, no. And I was like, that it was, I was horrified.
Oh my gosh.
And so I'm embarrassed to say a number of years went by while I lived like this. I took way too long to turn things around. But people kept telling me you should be a teacher. And I'm like, I don't want to be a teacher. I'm going to be a sportscaster. And like, no, you spent your life working around kids because of being an official. And so
Yeah.
I went back to college at 42, got my teaching
Good for
cert,
you.
eventually got my master's degree, and I ended up teaching in a Title I school. Title I means 75% of the kids live in poverty.
Yeah.
And I was hired to teach in a communications magnet where we had a little TV station, a radio station, newspaper, that kind of thing. And I came in there and I was a hard ass because I'd been in the real world, right? You got to be on time. You have to
Yeah.
meet your deadlines. And one day I'm in class and the kids hated me. They just did. I wasn't reading the room well. And this little, they'd done that bad TV show and I was embarrassed by the product we put out. And that little girl stood up, very pretty little girl, and she goes, we don't like you. And I went, I just paused. She goes, and we don't need you. And every kid in the classroom left. I'm standing in front of an empty classroom,
Holy cow,
crying,
how? What grade was
crying. Okay.
this?
I'm not going to tell you I never cried, but I never did it publicly. I'm crying in front of an empty classroom. And
What grade? What grade was
high
this?
school, sophomores, juniors, seniors. And I kept thinking, but I'm another teacher came to me shortly thereafter and she goes, you know, have you ever considered being nicer? Like, what do you mean nice? I said, the world's not nice. Sports fields aren't nice. The newsroom is not nice. I'm teaching them to understand how to deal with life. Be punctual. She goes, you need to be nicer. I didn't get it, right? And then one day I was in another class. This kid was chronically late every day. He came in 5, 10, 15 minutes late. So I drag him out. I said, you can't be late. You'll never be successful, whatever. And this kid's like 14, staring at his shoes. He goes, Miss Montgomery, I am so sorry. He said, but I slept on my uncle's couch last night and I didn't understand the bus system and I never know where I'm sleeping every night. And I try to get to school on time, but I can't. And I went, oh crap, I'm talking to a homeless child. And the light bulb went off in my head and I went, ah, nicer. I need to be nicer. I was nicer.
Wow.
Never get, and I realized at that point that you can't look at kids as a whole group. You have to look at them as individuals. And from that point on, I talked to every kid. What's going on? How are you doing? What are you interested in? What club can we get you in? You know, how's life? You know, how can I help?
Yeah.
And that's how I became a foster mom. Because,
Okay. I was going to ask you about
which is
that.
the most ironic thing because I couldn't have any children of my own, which when I was married, we tried to have children. It was very upsetting, as you can imagine.
Oh,
And
yeah.
so I gave up, right? So my kids lived in poverty, in ghetto situations, drugs, gangs, weapons, teen pregnancy, abuse, neglect, all of that. And so I worried at the end of the school year because the 10 weeks of unstructured life and no food, many of them didn't have food. We would send food.
Yeah.
We had free breakfast and lunch. And let me say here, I grew up in a middle class world where there was always whatever I needed. So
Right.
I didn't appreciate that until I was teaching in the school. By the way, stayed at the school for 20 years. And so I would put my phone number on the board at the end of the school year and say, look, If you get in trouble and you don't know what to do, call me and I'll help you if I can. Now they told you never to give them your number, but I did.
Oh,
And
yeah.
one summer, this young man, I had kids year after year, so I got to know them pretty well. If they were on the newspaper staff or the videos, I saw them, I knew them very well because they took my class. Some really loved me, some hated my guts, but some would stick with me. So one summer, this young man called me and I said, "Oh, Brandon, how are you?" He said, "Oh, I'm fine. I just want to talk." And I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what, and he wouldn't tell me. I said, "I put you in my newspaper class. I'm going to see you in the fall. It'll be good. We talked a few times." And then he didn't show up for school. And I worried, but his phone had been disconnected. And so a couple of weeks went by. He called me again. He goes, "Miss Montgomery, I'm hungry." I said, "What do you mean you're hungry?" He said, "Well, I'm in foster care. And they lock up all the food in the morning. I'm in a group home. And at school, they haven't gotten my paperwork yet, and because I'm at a different school. And so they won't feed me lunch and I'm hungry." I was so pissed. I said, "Can I reach you at this number?" He said, "Yes." And I said, "I'll get back to you." And I hung up. And luckily, there were no kids in my classroom. And I'm swearing my head off, stomping around like a pissed mother bear. And that teacher who told me to be nicer, she goes, "What is the matter?" And I told her. And she said, "Well, if it bothers you so much, call foster care and say he can come and live with you." I said, "Don't be ridiculous. I'm 55 years old. I've never had any children. I'm not a mother." She said, "Then stop complaining." 2 weeks later, that child was stopped, dropped on my doorstep. And since that time, I had two legal foster children who like I went through foster mom school, which is a thing. I'm so
Oh,
glad
yeah.
10 weeks of foster mom
Yes.
school. And I have two others that were not my legal foster children, but were homeless or, and so I consider them my four foster children. They're all in their 20s now. They call me mom. I'm a grandma. I have a 7-year-old grandson from my oldest, Brandon.
Oh.
And a couple of other young people that had nowhere to live or struggled have also come through my home, like there were maybe eight of them over the years. So, yeah, I became a mom. And if I hadn't been fired from TV and became a teacher, I wouldn't be a mom or a grandma. So, life is funny. Life takes
Life is
different
funny.
turns, and don't be afraid of them. And don't waste as much time as I did. I'm feeling sorry for yourself. You'll lose
Yeah.
jobs. You'll have to move. Relationships will end. New ones will start. And I'm just saying, I wouldn't change anything. I
Yeah.
really wouldn't, even though I went through some pretty awful years in there. Now when one of my kids will go, "Love you, Mom, miss you, see you next week," I'm like, "Oh yeah, that's me. I'm a mom." It's
Yeah.
very strange. Life is
Oh,
very strange.
that's beautiful.
And they were all my students.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, we are getting close on time, so I'm going to ask you my three final questions.
And I
The
realize I
first
didn't ask you a question. I'm sorry about
about
writing, about books.
the books.
Yeah, well, we'll
Real
do that
quick,
another
tell
time
me
then.
about your book. How
Well,
did
I
you do?
started writing as a sportscaster. People don't understand that's the number one skill. You have to be able to tell a story,
Oh,
15 seconds,
yeah.
30 seconds, whatever. And so then when I got out of television, I became a freelance print reporter where no one cared what I looked like. And I wrote longer stories. So the jump to novels is just a longer story. Write about things that interest me, not sports, things that interesting stories in the paper, societal issues, kids in cults, environmental
Wow.
issues. I have a couple of historical fiction. So yeah, that's what I do now. I'm an author.
I wish I had that touch. My mother kept telling me when I was growing up, you need to write, you need to write. I have an English major and a master's degree in English literature. What did that get me? Not much, but I absolutely love stories and reading. And yeah, so I would love to be an author one day. We'll see. We'll see if I get inspired. Okay. Here's my first question for you. If you can close your eyes real quick and tell me what appears in your mind's eye when I say wise woman.
For some reason, it's always a Native American woman sitting on a mountain with long, loose hair and being peaceful somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. Except I've lived in the Southwest for 35 years, 34 years, and we have a large Native American population. And I've written about some of my books deal with the archaeology and the Native Americans who've lived here hundreds of years ago. So that's probably why
Wow.
that's the case.
I have that same exact vision, to
Yes,
be
that was
honest with
strange.
you. And it's because I was brought up thinking that I had Cherokee Indian ancestry. I did 23andMe, and I don't. But my whole family believed that we had, Cherokee Indian ancestry, so that was kind of funny. But I have the same vision of a wise woman, a Native American shaman, healer,
That I wrote that
someone
one of
that.
my books, Wolfcatcher, is about a woman
Okay.
like that. But
Oh, I
she
have to
lived
read
900
that.
years ago. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I definitely have to read that. Okay. My next question is, where do you like to roam?
Anywhere where there's wilderness and not a lot of people. I'm a rock collector. I have 400 specimens just in my living room. So, the Arizona desert is magnificently beautiful, the Sonoran Desert.
Yeah.
But I love the mountains. I love the forests. I camped a lot as a kid. I love being out in the middle of nowhere. And I'm a scuba diver. So drop me in the ocean and let me just hear bubbles. And yeah, so I like to be in wilderness areas.
Yeah, me too. My younger daughter's a geologist, and
Really?
yeah, oh yes.
Cool, cool.
And we had rocks always,
I've
everywhere.
always had rocks since I was a little kid, and I'd go to
Yeah.
camp every summer, and my mother would take them and throw them in the garden. It would rain, they would sink. I'd go out, I'd dig them up, bring them back in. She finally, and then when I'm older and I have beautiful rocks, she goes, "Do you have something pink for this corner of the living room?" It's like, you hated my rocks, now you love them.
Yeah. I had rocks from the one daughter, and I had lizards and snakes and any kind of reptile from my other
I am both
daughter.
of your daughters combined. I
She,
know
there we go. Well,
that.
she was a herpetologist. Now she's a mortgage underwriter. She
Yeah.
couldn't find a job in her major, but she continues. And we had PetSmart in our basement for a long
I
time.
understand.
Yes. Okay, final question. This one's pretty good too. What makes you restless in a good way?
In a good way. I know the bad way is boredom. I'm very bad.
Yeah.
Restless. I think maybe my endless curiosity, because if I see something and I become inspired by it, so I have to know all about it right now. I can't
Yeah.
let it go. I can't go, maybe I'll do that tomorrow. I have to immediately start, Googling things and looking into it. I'm constantly looking things up and trying to. I'm delighted I was born with endless curiosity,
Oh, me too.
that's why it's funny because my books are so different. They're all so different about so many different things. I say, yeah, but they were interesting. The
Yeah.
idea inspired me, and I'm still looking for another one if I'm going to write another book. I don't know, but yeah, and I write articles every week. I blog every week, so these things fascinate me. I just wrote
Oh,
one of.
yeah.
About the people who are trying to regrow the coral reefs, and I went
Oh,
to one of the
yes.
facilities and met the people and saw the little baby corals. They treat them like human infants. Look, they're
Oh.
babies. It was really cool. So I write about things that interest me, and once I fixate on something, I have to talk to people involved. That's the reporter,
Oh,
When I
yeah.
write my novels, I mean, I Wild Horses on the Salt. I needed a cattle rancher, so I called one. Hi, Mr. Cattle Rancher. Can I come to your ranch and talk to you? Sure. So I went out and met a cattle rancher, and he happened to be a beekeeper. So the character in the book is a cattle rancher who's a beekeeper, and I learned
That
about
is so
beekeeping and
cool.
cattle ranching. So I don't know if it's restless or if it's I just zero in and want to learn more about things.
Well, I think it is a definite trait of wise women, is that
I would think.
constant learning and curiosity.
Right. Keep
Constant. Yes.
learning. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, Anne, it has been such a pleasure. I feel like we're soul sisters.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
Well, and thank you for, being as persistent as you were earlier in your
Does that
career,
mean
because
stubborn?
you, well, persistence and
Yeah.
stubborn. Hey, stubborn's a good thing too. But yeah, you opened so many doors for younger women, even if at the time you didn't realize that that's what you were doing. And I think there are a lot of women out there who really, really appreciate what people like you have done for them. And so
Well,
thank you
thank
for
you.
that.
Thank you. That makes all the bad days worthwhile.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Julie Noonan here. Thank you so much for listening to Roaming with Restless Women. If you're a successful senior woman leader who would like to be on this program, please visit podcast.intuitivewisdomcoach.com. If you enjoyed this interview, please share this episode on social media and make sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Your thumbs ups and reviews go a long way.